The third chapter of the Gospel of John is packed full of a lot of churchy stuff and a lot of insider language and a couple of really, really good metaphors. For some readers, this passage has something to do with baptism, this idea of being born of water and the Spirit. For others, the language about being born again is something that's associated with certain expressions of Christendom, particularly those that have that read the Bible pretty literally. The original passage prescribed for today actually goes through verse 17 and includes the famous John 3:16, the sign we see at football games, you know, John 3:16, the "For God so loved the world" verse that some of us are familiar with. But I felt that I needed to cut it back a bit, otherwise we're going to be all here all day and it's kind of nice outside and all of that. Nicodemus is the character in our story today, and he is a complex character, one of the more complex characters in the Gospel of John. He is first mentioned in this story here. He is a Pharisee, a member of an ancient piety movement within Judaism, and he's also a member of the Sanhedrin, or the assembly of religious leaders in Jerusalem at the time. Later in John's gospel, he actually argues with this assembly that they should not arrest Jesus during the Passover festival. And after Jesus has died, it's Nicodemus who brings spices like myrrh and aloes to anoint the body for burial. This initial conversation that Jesus has with Nicodemus is an important one for us. For one evening, Nicodemus comes to Jesus, perhaps to inquire on behalf of the Sanhedrin. After all, by this time in the Gospel of John, Jesus has already attracted followers. He has turned water into wine at a wedding, and he's driven out corrupt money changers from the temple complex in Jerusalem. Acknowledging that the presence of God is with Jesus, Nicodemus wants to know his intentions. Will Jesus participate in the traditional and established ways of doing religion in that area? Or will he be a challenge to these religious leaders? Of course, like usual, Jesus doesn't answer this with a simple yes or no. Maybe because it's not a simple answer. I don't know. But what Jesus does do is he uses two metaphors in these seven verses to help Nicodemus understand what Jesus is all about. And the first has to do with being born of the Spirit. Here, Jesus uses a familiar image, birth, to explain an important aspect of his teachings. In our gospel, the idea that people are children of God is a core teaching of Jesus, and a relatively new one for his time. Folks are more than their physical bodies, and in a world where physicality was more part of an everyday life than it is perhaps today, this was important. People, Jesus contends, are also spiritual beings with intellect and desires, ethics and emotions, imagination and ingenuity. But not only spiritual beings, people are children of God, bearing the characteristics of God, passing along the image of God, concerned with the same things that God is concerned about. This is news to Nicodemus, at least in the way that Jesus is telling it. And the text is unclear as to whether Nicodemus is taking Jesus literally here about this birth imagery or he's being playful. I kind of think he's being playful here with Jesus. But Jesus responds that people will not be able to see what God is doing in the world. Or in more traditional translation, no one can enter the kingdom of God without being born of the Spirit. And then Jesus uses the second metaphor, and it's a great one. The wind blows where it will. You hear it, but you don't feel it. but you don't know where it's been or where it's going. So it is with everyone who is born of the Spirit. Nicodemus comes to Jesus to figure out if he is a friend or foe to the religious establishment in Jerusalem. Will he be just a cool guy who can do party tricks at weddings? Or is he a revolutionary that challenges corruption in a religious tradition? Now, I've been part of a national young clergy group called the Next Generation Leadership Initiative for 4 years now, and I just had my last event with this group of clergy. Twice a year, we gather for week-long intensives on different areas of leadership or faith formation, or just to share best practices. I recently spent a week in San Francisco with a group, and the focus of that week was on innovation in local churches and something called human-centered design. And we did very few churchy things. We made cutting boards at a woodworking shop. We had dinner at food trucks and listened to a local artist speak. We experienced a Jewish Shabbat service, worship service, and dinner with a progressive Jewish community. We went to the Maker Faire in San Francisco, which has everything from barbecue sauces that are locally sourced to robots. I mean, it's kind of all over the place. We brunched on Sunday because we don't often get the chance to brunch on Sunday. And then we went to a progressive Pentecostal UCC church, which was unlike anything that I had ever experienced before. It was incredible. And the central idea behind these events came from our passage this morning. The wind blows where it will. You hear it, but you don't know where it's been or where it's going. So it is with everyone who is born of the Spirit. In the woodworking shop, I began getting frustrated because it took like 70 or 45 minutes for us to go over every single machine that we were going to use to make these simple cutting boards. And while I'm not a handy person, I kind of know what a saw is and, you know, and safety goggles. And then we went around the room and shared our experience working with tools. A room full of clergy, not the most handy group of folks. Most folks' experience had something to do with shop class in middle school or putting together IKEA furniture. And that was an important moment. I think the instructions are important when you have a diverse group. Maybe churches can learn something about this. After all, we do have a lot of insider language, like shops do. And it's easy for us to assume that everyone just comes in and gets it. But that's not the case. Or what about food trucks? You know, we had a meal in an area under an overpass where 9 or 10 food trucks were gathered. We shared a meal in a bus that had been converted to a dining room. And we listened to a local artist talk about public art that brings joy and the differences between joy and happiness. I thought about the location, how this almost felt like a church service underneath an overpass inside a converted bus. But I also thought about joy and happiness. You know, happiness is something that comes from outside of ourselves. We are happy when we watch videos online of kittens playing. But we have joy when we take care of something, like a kitten. Well, it seems like churches could learn something about bringing joy. How we can better lift up and support one another, and those things that speak to our souls, that drive us, inspire us, or cause us to thrive, even and maybe especially in these uncertain times. You know, last week, the Christian festival that celebrates the receiving of God's Spirit happened, Pentecost. The receiving of the Spirit is a seal for us, a reminder that we are spiritual beings, and not just spiritual beings, but children of God. The words for wind and breath and spirit are the same in Greek. And so our passage from John talks about how the Spirit of God moves in ways that we do not always understand. But if we listen for it, we'll experience it. And if we're innovative, we might be able to tap into it. I included the reading from the preamble to the Constitution of the United Church of Christ, even though it's a little dry. You read it like the best I've ever heard that dry passage. But there is this one line in here that I love. It says, "The United Church of Christ affirms the responsibility of the church in each generation to make this faith its own in reality of worship and honesty of thought and expression and in purity of heart before God." Each generation to make this faith its own. To be innovative and mindful of what people need. To make church that works for folks as they are, not as we wish they are. And this is challenging. You know, I think it's almost counterintuitive. After all, words like the church and innovation seem like they don't necessarily exist well in the same sentence together. An ivory tower is a state of privileged seclusion or separation from the facts and practicalities of the real world. I think sometimes churches build ivory towers, places to escape reality or spiritualize one of our baser desires like exclusion or discrimination or to maintain patriarchy. And it's done when we define our buildings as churches and not our people as churches. And it's done when our language is so idiosyncratic that no one gets it. And it's done when our hierarchical structures limit participation and squelch creativity from all of us. Wind moves around towers. Likely the Spirit of God moves around ivory towers, touching them but not affecting them. We, the church, the gathering of the children of God, folks interested in Jesus, don't need to build an ivory tower. We should be building windmills. We should be building something that harnesses the Spirit of God and provides energy and power to the wider community. We should be building windmills that are agile enough to turn so we are always able to face the wind, allowing God to be our inspiration and primary mover in all that we do. What might it take for us to make our 2,000-year-old faith our own in this generation? I think we are doing some of these things already. You know, whenever I go away to these young clergy events, I always come back more thankful for the faith community here. And it's not just because all of my clergy friends have these horror stories about their churches, and I'm kind of like, wow, that doesn't happen to me. I must be new. It's because I have a little time away from the hustle and bustle to acknowledge and celebrate all the ways we are challenging ourselves to make faith our own in this generation. With 6 years of supporting children through a 5K, that sounds innovative, and with ever-increasing community involvement, with our willingness to try new staffing models and different variations of worship, and by failing and on some things and still moving forward, I think there's still good work to do. You know, what does it mean to have more people involved in decision making, or how can we get new? How can we nurture our spiritual lives more fully in such a busy time? How can this community of faith better facilitate the passion of its members and friends and community members, asking people to bring not only their time or their money to support the church, but also their creativity and innovation, their new ideas and unique backgrounds? May we be reminded of the many gifts we have in this community. May we be reminded that the Spirit of God blows as it wills, and sometimes we can feel it, and maybe we can harness that. So we can build windmill churches and not ivory tower churches. For the greater glory of God. Amen.